Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the HTI-1 Proposed Role Task Force. All of our task force meetings are open to the public and your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting or can be made verbally during the public comment period that's scheduled towards the end of our meeting this morning. I'd like to begin roll call of our task force members, so when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Steve and Lane.
Good morning and welcome.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Nadell Briggs Melanson. Hans Butenbeck.
Good morning, Ms.
Hans. Tim Gerges. Hey, Hans. Tim Gerges. Anna McAllister.
Good morning.
Karen Meary. Ikilama Oshun Kenton. Narish Sundarrajan.
Good morning, here.
Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I know Cheryl Turney is out this week and next week, so she won't be able to join us. So now please join me in welcoming Stephen Lane and Steve Eichner for their opening remarks.
Good morning and welcome all. Welcome to our task force members and welcome to members of the public. We will have an opportunity for public comments towards the end of our meeting. Do encourage folks from the public to make comments at that time. You may also make comments in our chat functionality, although we cannot respond or may not respond to comments in the chat until that public comment period. We've got a good agenda set out for today where we're going to be spending our morning working on the worksheet to kind of finalize our recommendations for submission to the HITECH and then onwards to ONC, just to give you kind of an update as to where we stand in our process. We're going to work on recommendations this week. And for next week, we are going to be inviting task force members from each work group to all of the task force meetings to contribute and review recommendations at that point and provide a capstone review of the entirety of the recommendations package later next week in preparation to present the entire recommendation package to the full HITECH at the meeting in person in DC. So we do encourage task force members to participate in as many task force meetings as they want to next week. Do please review the existing worksheets, not just for the task group or the work group in which you are participating, but the other work groups to identify if there are areas or recommendations that you are interested in commenting on, because we are getting to the end of our process and it will have limited opportunity to make further modifications in the next week or so. So I want folks to be able to take advantage of it. We'll go quickly through our chart. Or Stephen, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that is a great overview, and let's jump right in.
Okay, well, we're going to go a quick review of our charge and then really get into it. So next slide, please. And just as a reminder for everybody, our general charge is for the task force to prepare recommendations for HITECH review for submission to ONC regarding HTI-1, which is a proposed rule that implements a variety of different activities across public or across data exchange and health technology. Next slide. Again, this drills down a little bit into the specific charges. We're not going to go line by line this morning. The content is available in your packets for further review. Next slide. This slide is just reminding us of the areas that were specific to our work group. and we're going to move forward and review recommendations. So we're going to shift over to the worksheet. And look first at the first section, which, or the first area of recommendations, which was looking at DSI. And we have a number of recommendations in that space. Let's move over to column I, please.
Yeah, if you can get I and J to show up and
And
as best you can. But Anna, I definitely recommend that you also pull up the spreadsheet on your own if you can.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'd added a bunch of stuff. So they're all noted with my initials, but I did not touch the co-chair responsibility one.
So what Stephen and I did was we've reviewed all of the content in earlier columns and attempted to draft in consistent language recommendations that could be included in the task force's report to HITECH and then subsequent submission to ONC. So we want to use this meeting as an opportunity to make changes, add, augment, delete, etc. to this recommendation language.
Ike, Anna did add 8 additional comments in G. Did you have a chance to look at those as you prepared your content in J?
I looked at some of them. I may not have been as complete.
Okay, well, let's go. Let's go with what we have. We also have, notably, we have next week to finish this work. But as much of this as we can get through today, the better.
So one of the recommendations that came out of task force discussions was recommending that ONC conduct robust testing of initial and ongoing DSIs to assess for unintended differences in outcomes across different patient demographics and health conditions. Is that a recommendation that we want to put forward?
Yes.
Is there any dissent or any recommended changes?
I mean, there are some like nuanced recommendations embedded, and I have not gone through what you guys have sort of digested and made into recommendations.
Anna, why don't we go through the ones that Ike pulled forward and see if there are any things missing?
Okay.
That might be most efficient.
Okay.
Then recommending that ONC require that relevant information regarding a particular patient be presented in the context of the data model used to develop a particular DSI module so that patient can easily visualize where they stand or their data stands in relationship to the DSI tool and understand the relevance of the DSI output in the context of that particular patient. Part of the rationale for that is there is significant risk that DSA modules may not accommodate or account for the variety of patients that a particular provider may see, and there may be some conditions where the DSI output may be clinically inappropriate for a particular patient, and catching those early would be useful and helpful and avoid putting additional responsibility or negative patient impacts on having to potentially pursue issues with payers and other components to get exceptions from what might be a recommended course of treatment from a DSI module.
This is Phil. I wonder with this one, is it also a context issue with the DSI potentially, where we look at the clinical decision support and what context we're sending over for the DSI to make the decision, and somehow ensuring that the context is relevant and complete for the DSI, where we make sure we study that we are delivering the proper context.
Can you elaborate a little bit further?
Well, I think of it as, so if the patient does have some type of a rare diagnosis, that's certainly something that we would not want to leave out if we're transmitting a set of information over to the DSI, right? So ensuring that as we enable these predictive models, that there's some type of framework for presenting the correct context, which I think we've got the baseline for that with the CDS hooks. But I don't know if we've considered CDS hooks in the full context of the ever broadening DSI models that are out there.
Right. I think a challenge here is looking at trying to successfully define what might be the inputs or a DSI, but it sounds like you're suggesting that there be a core set of required inputs that a DSI module might need to consider.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad idea, but is that the direction that you were thinking?
Right. I think just bulking up potentially looking at that as a consideration, right? I totally agree that that's a really broad ask for all of the various conditions that are out there. But if we're sticking with, more of a static model of here's the context that we're providing to the DSI, and that model doesn't include all of the relevant context on the patient data, well, the DSI is going to make a bad decision based on that potentially.
Right. I think that's it's a good idea. I think, and we'll talk, we can talk about kind of a parallel piece as we're looking at patient consent information and looking at piloting or focusing perhaps initially on a selected set of data classes or data elements?
Well, one of the recommendations that I made was that perhaps if not all of the relevant information is there, so if there are any variables in the DSI that are not, that would be unknown, that the DSI doesn't work, it is not usable. So, and if we stipulate that the variables be diagnoses, that some of the variables be diagnoses, and the developer could say, is there a mechanism through which, like, if there are specific diagnoses in which this DSI has not been tested, then it just doesn't let the DSI work.
Right, and I appreciate the point. My question, I guess, is that are there other criterion other than diagnoses that where it would be related, because it may not be, diagnosis is certainly a good place to start.
Right.
But are there other related fields that should also be included? I could easily imagine, for example, a patient's mass or weight, diagnosis unspecific. If the patient were a significant outlier from the data used to model the DSI, then that might result in an output that is not compatible.
Correct. Yes. Depending on what the, I mean, I to state the incredibly obvious fact, like it's difficult to do this in the abstract when there are so many potential DSIs that could be developed. So.
Right. So where I was thinking is that if you include, I can support that concept as a recommendation. I think it becomes a stronger recommendation if we can also include at least an initial set on which to build in similar fashion to recommendations about patient consent in terms of looking at, or disclosure, looking at an initial set of selected fields that might be selectable and that as a foundation on which to build.
I'm not following the patient consent element of this.
Oh, it's not in this particular recommendation, but there is a later recommendation regarding implementing patient disclosures where there's discussion about starting with an initial set of USCDI classes rather than looking at absorbing selection across every particular field. In that same vein, can we start by saying, hey, this is the initial set of criterion that a DSI should consider as inputs?
So restrict them to data that's in the USCDI?
No, with respect to this, to the DSI recommendation, is there an opportunity to put some guidelines about what input fields initially to help identify where the DSI, a particular DSI, should not be applied from an input perspective?
Well, I think it would be difficult for us to prescribe that across the board for all. And by all means, please let me know if I'm under-caffeinated and missing something. But I think it would be difficult for us to sort of proactively define all of the fields that would be needed for all of the potential DSIs ahead of time. What I would think that might be more manageable would be to have the developer list out all of the data elements that need to be present for this DSI to work for as part of its submission for approval or whatever process it is that is set up.
But listing out the fields doesn't help identify where that particular module shouldn't be applied. If, example, diagnosis is an element that's included for processing a DSI response, that doesn't inform, it says, oh, you should not apply this DSI to this particular diagnosis.
I think that's going to have to be written out by the developer, and there should be mechanisms for challenging that. And that's part of some of the recommendations that I put in recently suggest that there has to be a mechanism for feedback for clinicians and patients to be able to say, this DSI as written does not work for my patient group or for me, so that there's a feedback loop to the developers so that they can improve it. But I would say that at a minimum, I think as part of the coding of the DSI, that if there are elements, if there are specific data elements that need to be present for that DSI to work appropriately as tested, that if all of those elements are not present with a variable specific to that patient, then it trips something that the DSI cannot be deployed. Or that trips some sort of a flag or a warning saying, this DSI was developed, this does not have all of the data elements that are required for this DSI to work as developed or tested.
But isn't that kind of inherent in the development of any particular DSI?
I don't know. Is it? If it is, then awesome.
I can't imagine writing a return that said that wouldn't say, hey, you missed, there's a missing variable, I can't calculate a response, or hey, this response is returned, but you didn't include this, so it affected the return either way.
I have not written a DSI personally, so I don't know. I don't know how, I mean, frankly, I think it would be great to have, as I was going through putting in my recommendations, it was like, well, this all sounds great in terms of like protecting patients from like potential risks that could be introduced by the DSI, but I also recognize as a patient that there are many risks that are mitigated through improvements in these kinds of things. And it's difficult to write in a vacuum without getting input from what the potential consequences of to slowing innovation might be. So
I think we can include it. Do other task force members have a viewpoint or experience? Is this a necessary or useful recommendation?
Hi, this is Hans. Generally, I think that having insight into the data being used or the data context where it should not be used as a general framing would be helpful, but I'm trying to dive into the details as to which data specifically would fit in one category or the other beyond perhaps a couple of examples. And generally, there's already statements about DSI and USCDI interaction, but it may not, DSI might be against that, but it might also against data not yet in the USCDI to be viable. So I think it would be careful to get into the details of what data should or should not be included in such statements, rather clarify what data is used and what context it might not be appropriate to use. It's kind of like with medications, adverse events, where do you not use it and where it is, and that needs to be clear, but exactly where it is depends on the context of the DSI.
But there also needs to be some sort of a feedback mechanism, because any developer, let's assume they're the best developer out there and they've got the best of intentions, which I think, you know, anyway, let's just start that there with our baseline assumptions. They're going to miss something when you start thinking about applying, just like with drugs. I mean, to use the, you know, that same analogy, you're going to miss something because there's so many differences, so many different diseases, so many different, idiosyncratic presentations within each disease category, and complexities of people with comorbid conditions and different medications. Like, they're going to miss something. So we need to have some mechanism to know what the variables are, how those variables are integrated, and to have somebody who is an expert in a rare disease or in endocrinology, or, you know, of a particular type, give feedback back to the DSI developer to say, this needs to be, you know, this doesn't work and this creates a dangerous situation in this particular patient population, and allow them to be able to fix it in future versions of the DSI, and to be able to flag it for populations in that version of DSI. Kind of like the app store. I mean, otherwise we're going to have kind of least common denominator DSIs that aren't going to work in certain people, and no established mechanism for getting feedback.
Okay, so I think I've gotten there. I've added some text. Recommend that ONC require that HIC developers include as an attribute associated with a DSI. A list of all data elements in the expected range of each value required for the successful processing of a submission to the DSI module.
Are you writing that in the sheet now?
Yes, I just typed it.
And what?
Which column?
Yeah, make sure it sticks.
Just update.
Someone else might have been in there when you were trying to type.
Yeah, I don't. Where would you?
It's the third. It's currently the third recommendation.
List all data elements in the expected range of values required for the successful processing of a submission to the module.
You've got somebody in the worksheet.
Yeah, I can't see who's there.
Somebody's typing zeros.
Did it get in there, Ike, what you wrote?
I may have to retype it.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's come back. We have spent a lot of time on this. So we got general agreement on your first one. What about the second? And well, the third needs to be redone, right?
No.
Did we agree on the second?
I thought I said with the updated edition that I created that could be merged with number two, because if the first one, the current second bullet set is that that relevant information is available, I think that can be blended with what I just described. So that might just be a touch-up area. And I agree with Anna's comment that ONC should work towards what the feedback loop could or would look like, so that experiences can be shared around that from a DSI perspective. So somehow that needs to be blended in there. And I think it needs to be clear that when we talk about DSI developers, it's truly the ones that develop the DSI, not necessarily because they know what's needed and what's not needed, versus those that integrate it into their systems need to be aware of that so they integrate it into the right place.
Also, for the first recommendation, we need to have ONC stipulate. We can't just say robust, we need to have them stipulate exactly what that includes, because one person's definition of robust is not going to suffice for somebody else. And rarely do those things integrate input from diverse patient populations.
Okay, what language would you suggest?
Develop guidelines for specific elements for robust testing that incorporates input from patients, providers, from diverse set of patients, providers, that, you know, represent the populations that will be impacted by the DSI. Or demonstrates, you know, how this works across diverse data sets not included in the original training data.
Okay, if we ask ONC to work with stakeholders to develop testing criterion, that means that there won't be inclusion of testing criterion in this release of a final rule.
Well, I didn't say ONC work with with stakeholders. I said ONC stipulate specific types of feedback that needs to be included within the concept of robust testing.
So how do you operationalize that?
I would stipulate the robust testing needs to be, the DSI needs to be tested using training data that is not, that would represent all of the settings in which the potential DSI might be used, and that the assumptions about both inputs that are relevant and outputs should be tested or should be exposed to state.
Hey, Ike, how would you feel about letting Anna draft this offline?
And that would be fine.
Incorporate it.
Yeah, we need
enough time for this.
We need to move on.
I'm sorry, Anna, but we've got so many to go through here.
No, I completely agree, but I think this is incredibly complex, and I'm not sure that it makes sense to embed this particular thing in a 500-page rule with a whole bunch of other stuff.
Okay, moving further down.
So which one are you on now, Ike?
I think we're looking at module developers to provide access to DSI attribute information in a standard format.
Ike, may I raise a question on the one just before that?
Sure.
Consider how DSI certification could best be presented. There's a reference there to non-certified health IT, and I'm not sure what really the intent is by this. Is it the intent that we want to recommend a way so that that those that are typically not certified, that they can use that information, and that it becomes challenging because at the second sentence says to meaningfully attest to DSI. But I think you only attest to it might be interpreted as part of certification. So I'm not sure how that how this is meant to be focused. I think I have an idea what the overall intent is, but it's not coming through clearly to that recommendation.
Sure. I think the goal here is to look at supporting access to DSI attribute information, not solely for certified health information technology, but for other consumers or other users of DSI.
Hey, Ike, it's Jim Jurgis. Can I comment on that?
Please.
Can you hear me? Yeah, it seemed like part of the intent of this is to, we can require the certified technology to have, you know, certain requirements to be able to show the attributes of a DSI. But also when they're interfacing with third-party apps, they need to actually be able to have those third-party apps provide that information to then display in certified technology. So I read this as just making sure that those standards are available for third-party developers so that they know how to construct it so that it can be shown in the EMR. But wouldn't these be, would we need to be deliberate about making sure that, these standards are going to be published, right? So any non-covered or non-certified technology would have access to those standards. Do we need to call that out?
Right, so the non-certified technology can also consume or utilize a DSI that is certified.
Well, no, what I'm saying is if we're using, let's say HCA, we're using Meditech, and Meditech has the ability to, within its own DSI, you know, have a link that shows the attributes of the algorithm, you know, what population is tested on. But we may also be interested in the vendor who's created some AI that then interfaces with certified technology. And as we're using that, there needs to be a place in the certified technology to show those same attributes for that algorithm that was developed by a non-certified company, right? That non-certified company may want to get them to comply. And so I read this as those non-certified companies that create value-added services for DSI, they need to understand the requirements so that they can actually create a little baseball card or whatever we're going to call it, so they can send to the certified technology those details so the user can click on it and learn about the same information about those algorithms. Are other people understanding this differently?
Did we lose you, Jim?
I'm sorry. I did go on mute. Yeah, my understanding here is that if we're HCA, for example, we use Meditech. Meditech and we may develop DSI that then we'd want to be able to have a link that shows the different attributes we've been talking about, what population, what bias, et cetera. But increasingly, there may be a non-certified technology company that develops sophisticated algorithms that needs to be able to also publish to the certified technology through an interface that same information, so that when our doctors or providers are using the AI that is generated by a non-certified entity, that entity can still send to Meditech and display that same set of attributes. You see what I'm saying? That's what I thought this meant, is that third parties may be developing DSI that are then integrated, the results of which may be as simple as, a service where we provide data, there's an algorithm, and then an answer is provided back. Well, with that answer ought to be standard, formatted, and structured, baseball card that indicates all these aspects of that algorithm that the non-certified technology has developed.
So to restate, basically enabling developers that are not producing certified technology to build a DSI module that is compatible with certified technology using the same interface criteria.
Yeah, correct.
I think that's certainly sensible, because there are a variety of entities, including like public health, as an example, with vaccine forecasting, that is not a certified technology or offered as a certified technology. But there's certainly...
We have a long line of AI companies that if they only had our data and we form an agreement with them that they can take that data and do sophisticated, like sepsis monitoring. I mean, it's not all going to be developed by the provider and the certified technology companies. There's a whole marketplace of advanced analytics, predictive and prescriptive model services. And what I'm saying is that they need to be able to also send all this information about what's their bias, who's the intended user, what population, right? And so those non-certified technology companies, there's a ton of use cases where we would tap into them, and they'd need to integrate into the EMR, and they'd need to also provide all this information for the user, or at least they need the ability to. And that's all I'm saying. And I think this bullet, I think that's what it's trying to say.
Yeah, and then a method of demonstrating that they are compliant with the DSI requirements.
Yeah, because though they're not forced to be compliant now, that may come from their customer base, right? We may say, hey, look, you're not compliant. Well, I know you're not a certified technology, but we're not even gonna have a deal with you if you guys can't even provide the stuff that.
Right. So as kind of a mini certification for the DSI.
Well, I just say that the tool has to be certified. Third parties, the rule itself says it can be integrated, that the results, it can be a service. We just need the ability to let those third parties understand what other information they need to send along with the results so that it can be displayed in the EMR so a user can understand the limitations of the algorithm.
I thought the point was that if the DSI developers did not meet these criteria, that they would not be able to be integrated to the EHR. Is that not what we're talking about here? Because I mean, what you're raising is also a concern of mine as somebody who's done two health tech startups is like, you know, it's one thing to be super cautious and to say this has, you know, this is the ideal in terms of how it would work and getting input from diverse stakeholders, et cetera, et cetera. But that also means that you're creating a really big barrier to entry for people who could be doing innovating things that could be life-saving. And that's, it's difficult to consider the potential benefit risks in the abstract across so many different disease areas or real world scenarios. And
well, Anna, you're right, but I think that's already been sort of quote litigated, if you will, by the FDA's guidance document, right? Which does not just focus on certified technology. It's expecting that any DSI that is being used by a clinician or patient would have a FDA approval process. And all this rule is saying is what the certified technology needs to do to make sure that that can be displayed in the EMR for the user. But the whole notion of do non-certified technology companies have to go through FDA certification, et cetera, the answer is yes. This rule is just to make sure the tool is able to receive that. You know, that the certified tools can actually be set up to let the provider see that.
I'm going to ask that you look at the text in the drafted recommendation and make comments in the worksheet. We will revisit it next week. We need to move on.
Hi, this is Hans. I have a question and put in a suggestion. I put in a note that in column K, for the one that we're just talking about, whether that might be reflecting some of the discussion. And the second sentence in that context, whether that is still needed. So I kind of struck it through for now. So I'm getting the sense that it is focused on the DSI developer, where they make appropriate attributes available so that the HIT, that where it's going to be incorporated, that they have the ability to understand what it is and can, in a way, redisclose that information as appropriate under the requirements to provide that. And maybe that could reflect what the discussion was about.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, again, please look at and make comments in column K, and we will reintegrate them next week.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Hans, that's very close to a recommendation I just added in column G. So I will move that over to column K.
At least we were working in two different columns, not overriding.
And I'd like to thank the members for all their concentrated effort. I really appreciate it. I think we're going to end up with a really good product coming out.
So just to be clear, so if I have comments about what the recommendations are, I should put them in column K.
Yes, please.
Okay, Ike, what's next?
In the same kind of vein, I think this connects in, looking at a requirement that ONC require HIT module developers to provide access to DSI attribute information in a standardized format. You know, publicly searchable web page without login and without providing a blocks limiting indexing by external entities. Basically, the concept here is that members of the public and other developers can understand what DSI modules may be available and the descriptive attributes around or necessary for using that DSI module, it is not intended to provide actual access to the DSI module itself. And part of the goal here is so that patients can understand what the relevant DSI modules may be in advance of their working with a physician or other care provider on the specific DSI module that they are, that their provider may be using.
So, Mike, if I understand correctly, that would be that not only to the users that data is being made available, provider, patient, whomever, of the HIT module on what is being used and that they have access to it, but that it's generally cumulatively available in a public-facing environment on what's being used.
Right. Where the another benefit of providers being able to identify DSI modules that they may not currently be using.
I'm somewhat hesitating in from a following perspective, and that is that in decision making on care, there's a wide variety of knowledge that's being used by a variety of participants. This is a subset of the knowledge that's being used to contribute towards decision making, where it's decision support. Are we suggesting that all the knowledge that is being used is starting to be summarized this way, and particularly where it is interpreted, interpretations of what is being presented on the screen? I'm trying to figure out how this leads to a potential under or over representation, but particularly under representation of what all goes into decision making. This is certainly one of them, but what else would a provider have to start to disclose?
I think the goal here is to help build a catalog of DSI modules that may be available. That's HIT developer agnostic.
That ONC would maintain.
It's not even maintained as a directory. It's requiring that the developer publish the information on their website and let Google or whomever index it so that it can be found through a search, not creating a new catalog of information.
So it would be the original DSI capability developer that provides that information.
Right.
And ONC would set the standards for what had to be included in that information.
Correct.
Okay.
Which are basically it's the attributes that are already in the list. So we're not creating new information. It's just making that information publicly available or findable or searchable.
Right. That seems like a pretty reasonable minimum standard.
Because it helps everybody identify a module that may be useful to them.
Right.
Oh, hey, I was looking for a module to help evaluate a patient for X. Well, if I can do a Google search for HIT, you know, using keywords, HIT module, whatever, it's more likely to turn up rather than if it's hidden behind a firewall somewhere. It doesn't mean I can use it. It just means I know where it exists and I can inquire with the owner about getting access.
Yeah, I think that seems pretty reasonable as a minimum standard.
So would that mean that this where it currently says require HIT module developers, that's meant to be required DSI developers to provide access to DSI attribute information, et cetera, et cetera?
I would think.
Yeah.
And this would be preferable to a directory maintained by ONC?
Where would it live?
yeah, if ONC wanted to use an indexing tool to collect it, it certainly could. As could Google, as could a provider, as could any entity. But the goal here is not to require developers to have to actively register their tool with a particular entity.
That makes sense.
Again, trying to reduce administrative burden, but still improve access to content.
Yeah. And it would be, so would somebody, if ONC or a private entity wanted to create some sort of an index, these parameters that are listed here would be sufficient to make sure that it would be, they'd be able to pull that up.
Or at least locate the information. They may still need to spider the relevant websites.
Right, yeah.
But the information would be findable and locatable.
Right. I think that's makes perfect sense then.
And available XML tags or something, so it's both human readable and machine usable, right? If you want to build a report out of it, you can.
Yeah.
Could this be in collaboration with the FDA as it ties into overall definitions of decision support, where it fits in, et cetera, align with the guidance that FDA provides as to when to provide what information?
I would think so. Again, the goal here is not, the focus here was not to create another directory per se. It might facilitate the development of a directory.
I think this makes perfect sense.
But it's just to help people be able to find the information they may be looking for.
I'm sorry, Ike.
No,
I was going to say it sounds somewhat equivalent to the Lantern project, but I think with that, we had to at least provide the endpoint to ONC so that they could get it into that directory. I don't think they were actively scraping the web for fire endpoints.
Yeah, again, this approach is not attempting to create an extra project or an extra activity on the developer. I guess there would be nothing prohibiting them from voluntarily contributing the information somewhere, but again, not as a requirement.
Right, yep.
And then in the same vein, looking at the next recommendation, providing guidance to HIT developers regarding a list of all DSI modules and their attribute data provided through the EHR implementation during patient care in support of transparency requirements.
And it would be certified HIT instead of EHR.
Yeah.
So Ike, can I make a suggestion that we focus in on the recommendations and less on their implementation? I really am worried that we are not going to get through these by the end of our meeting next week at the rate we're going.
Yeah. So looking at the next draft recommendation, looking at clarifying the distinction between enables and interface. Any concerns? Hans, I think this was initially a recommendation that was a recommendation based on text that you had suggested. Does this meet your expectations?
I think so.
Okay. So are we considering this one locked? I think this recommendation regarding USCDIs actually misplaced and belongs in the USCDI discussion, so we can either visit it now or come back to it.
Which one are you on? These aren't numbered, so.
The issue at risk, or the issue of it, is looking at what happens when the version of USCDI is updated through the SFAP process, and what are the implications for that on US on DSI hooks.
I got nothing on that. Let somebody who actually knows what they're talking about comment.
So I think this was another one that came from your suggested text.
Yeah, yes. Here the question is that there's a lot of DSI already being used under the header of CDS, not necessarily AI-based DSI, but other DSI. So as you are updating USCDI, which is part of the scope, that means that there's already deployed certified HIT that covers data that's currently not in USCDI that will come into it, et cetera. So it's creating a question of how do you go back as USCDI expands on what the expectation is that existing DSI that otherwise was not necessarily using that data yet now is, how does that flow in? Can that be done in a, as you update, you update the relevant documentation, or do you need to immediately go back to everything that you already had and documented at that point in time? So it can you spread the load, or does it all have to happen at the same point in time that now USCDI is expanded and five more data elements were included that already existing DSI is taking advantage of? Where does that fit? So it's trying to smooth the process a little bit off as USCDI expands.
So I think with the assumption, if the assumption is that the USCDI change in version always either remains the same or expands data elements and classes and doesn't relocate a data element between classes, then a subsequent version of the USCDI should be backwards compatible with an older version.
That's not as much a concern. It's the concern is that DSI already in place, it has been there, it has been using data, and the documentation requirements change based on the USCDI scope. That's how do you manage that? And because that might put a requirement to go to already deployed software to go back through and update to everything at the same point in time to the latest USCDI as part of SFAP.
Just for that particular SFAP, I guess, looking at the scope of SFAP, so the SFAP module, or looking at SFAP upgrade for the entire HIT module?
So when you go through SFAP and you want to update to the latest FHIR US core and or CCDA, that means that you thereby are supporting the for that module G10, using as the example, you now support the next USCDI version. Does that now mean that you have to go back to all your DSI, which you otherwise did not necessarily make changes to, that you have to also then, because you now claim conformance to a larger USCDI scope, that you also need to go back and update the DSI documentation that may not have included at that point in time, there was DSI that was done against other capabilities done in the USCDI. How does that relate? Even though you're not working on that, you're updating FireEye Score to USCDI latest version. Do I now have to go back and at that time update the DSI, or is that as DSI updates? How is that done? That's the clarification request.
Right. I think it's a good recommendation. Again, the difficulty is, or the challenge is, that it's kind of unintended consequences. But if you don't at a minimum update your documentation, then you're not reflecting what you may be actually using to implement a particular tool. In other words, I'm saying I'm using USCDI version 2, but in actuality I'm using version 3. Once I go through SVAP. Correct? Is this a recommendation that we want to put forward at this time?
This is above my technical capability to comment, so I won't defer to you guys.
Yeah, I agree with Hans, your concern. I'll say I didn't get that. I didn't understand what this paragraph was saying when I first read it. So I think perhaps we could simplify or reword slightly. Sure. But I agree with the concern.
So Hans, can I ask you to revise for clarification?
Sure, and I'll run it by Phil. I'll send something, see whether that catches it better, if that's okay, Phil.
Thank you, yep.
I think it makes sense if you've got the technical background. Without the technical background, it's difficult to follow.
Yeah, there's some intricacies in ASFAP on how that runs, and
right,
you need to adopt everything in total. That's
right, exactly. And then final recommendation in this space, providing guidance to HIT developers regarding the contents and format of a DSI label, kind of consistent with the idea we talked about earlier about sharing information using something like the food nutrition label as a method of packaging information. So I think we can go through and collapse that recommendation with the earlier one about indexing. As a general comment, the report looking at potentially asking the annual report work group to undertake a recommendation that ONC more specifically clarify the role and expectation of patients and care partners as stakeholders looking at the future development of DSI and looking at including diverse representation of patient voice in work groups and task forces in the future, looking at future DSI work. And looking at consensus around FAVE's definitions and the like in terms of defining minimum attributes. Is that acceptable?
think that's acceptable. I would like for this specific recommendation that we have ONC include patients as, or individuals, consumers, whatever word it is you want to use, as a user, because I just think that that's a bare minimum. It should be included in our recommendations. And more broadly, I mean, I know I've raised this on the high tech meetings, but I think one of the core like values that ONC, as they, you know, they list out specific things that they have to do and consider for each of their actions. You know, it includes like burden on industry, as well as diversity, equity, inclusion, et cetera, that it needs to consider the impact and burden on patients.
I believe patients are already included in the definition of health IT user. If that's what you're looking at.
Is it? I mean, I didn't see that in the rule, but if that's defined elsewhere, somewhere that embeds that inherently within the rule, that's great.
Yeah, I believe I will validate in the next week, but I believe that's a core component of the underlying framework.
Is this meant to be similar to the other discussion where it is not in the context of DSI being performed, but a general understanding of what DSI is used, that we could combine that into how that information can be combined and made publicly available? I'm looking at the complexity of this versus the complexity of a nutrition label. I understand the conceptual equivalence, but I'm not sure whether at this point in time at the level of relative simplicity by which a nutritional label can be put together versus a DSI label, that we understand what is that, how much information is that, how can it be readable for the intended audience. So I think that would require a fair amount of work, particularly when the focus is not on the provider, but on the patient, to make that informative and consumable.
Well, that's why I think it would be super helpful if ONC came up with USDA does, if ONC came up with a standard label, and then tested it and make sure, I mean, that you are correct. That's going to take time, a substantial amount of time and effort and people who are experts in information presentation, et cetera. But it's something that needs to be done and they should probably start now and move towards the future. And a part of the recommendations that I put in there is that this is something that should be updated on a regular basis, because you don't want to like have some sort of label that begins now that becomes so like difficult to change that it isn't something that could be updated to as DSI becomes more sophisticated and this whole system evolves. So, but there needs to be some way of readily looking at this so that you don't, I mean, it's not realistic to only rely on transparency in terms of like having that information available for somebody to find it if they have the time and health literacy and sophistication to be able to do it. But doctors are going to be applying this in the care setting, and it's already too much of a burden for them to input things in the EHR. They're not going to be searching out specific parameters. So I think it would help if ONC came up with some sort of an easily digestible model so that if you want to dig into the details, you can dig into the details and you know where to look for what it is you want to find.
Would this be something that is more of a next step as opposed to a final rule opportunity, considering that it requires a fair amount of development analysis to understand how that could best be done? and then particularly HIT developer, in particular DSI developers contributing the information for that to be able to plug that in if that's the intent. I'm not convinced that this is a actionable final rule recommendation or that it's an actionable next steps recommendation.
Well, I think we need to make a recommendation to ONC. The specifics of the timeline and how it gets incorporated, I don't know. I mean, perhaps we should recommend that, you know, for this rule, presumably if it comes out this year, that it includes specific data elements that need to be exposed, and that also that ONC begins this process of defining and developing a quote unquote information label.
What happened? This is like, what happens if we include a suggestion, recommendation that the attributes include a patient-friendly description of the DSI module?
I mean, that's a very, and I don't mean this to sound mean, but that's a very vague description, and it leaves a lot up to interpretation. So the way that I did it, my recommendations, is that it needs to be tested to see if it actually is something that works. But I mean, USDA spends a lot of time and money developing like the nutrition label. I did some work on it like a long, long, long time ago. So this is not something that's going to get done in 2 months. It's going to take some time and research and testing and all of that.
Where I was aiming was it's a twofold piece, maybe a threefold piece. One, looking at the contents of the label. Two, looking at presentation. And if we look at the DSI attributes as being a content source for the label, that may be a good start.
Yeah.
So building on your concept, I was thinking about, hey, is there an opportunity to recommend, to change the recommendation to say, leveraging the contents of the attributes, develop a patient-friendly interpretive document or interpretive resource.
Sure.
That kind of gets you down that path. No, it's not going to happen in 2 months. But again, looking at the idea of a label, well, that creates a bunch of issues potentially down the line about how to implement that label across different technologies and apps and interfaces and screen sizes, et cetera. And that's a complex issue, whether it's accessible for screen readers, et cetera. That's a whole minefield of things that in itself is a deep project, good project, but not to be implemented in the next couple of months.
Right.
But at least if we say, hey, look to these attributes as a source and augment the attributes to include additional patient-friendly data might be a good start.
I think that's great. Maybe we suggest they do a design contest and award like the top three designs of it at the end of the year. I don't know. As always, it works on their own version or a different version.
So let's make, I would go ahead and make some changes in that. We will revisit it next week. We're gonna have a lot of work to do next week, I'm afraid. We barely got through first group.
One of two of our meetings on HTI. I mean, on DSI, my bad. So do you want to try to tackle ECR in the next 4 minutes before we go to public comment, Ike?
I think so.
So I'm assuming on those ones above, Ike, that you're going to go back and reword them additionally based on our discussion, right?
Yes.
Yeah, perfect.
The only one that we're leaving as is the one that is in bold.
And then if I have any comments to what you're recommending, I'll put it in the next column over. I didn't want to do it during this because I didn't want to screw up everybody else writing things.
Okay, ECR.
So looking at a couple of recommendations are one require that recommend that ONC require that if an HIT module is certified only for CDA or fire, that there also that there be a additional requirement that the HIT module developer identify and test a conversion service to the other transmission element, even though it's not integrated into that particular HIT module. The concern being that a healthcare provider does not need to face challenges in connecting to a public health authority that only supports one of the two options. There are a number of third-party entities that are capable of ingesting either resource so that it we're not looking at creating new technology for the service, but again, looking at end-to-end testing and implementation so that the interoperability can occur with minimal effort on the provider side at implementation.
Hans has a hand up.
Generally agreed with this, but I would think is that the first and the third bullet should be in sync, so that that same capability of outbound from a provider perspective, that it can be converted, mapped into the other format, APHL AIMS having been used as a primary example, that the same can be done on the inbound, so that from a provider HIT EHR perspective, that you support for both the submission and the responsibility response, either CDA-based or fire-based. If you want to do both, fine, but you only need to do one, and that it's a pair.
If you can identify a third party that is capable of translation.
And the thing is that on the first bullet that's identified where you have that, on the third bullet, that should be the equivalent.
Right. Yeah. We can make that change.
Or you can combine it and say is that the initial case report and the responsibility response, that they choose one or the other, where there is the opportunity to convert in the other one using those available capabilities.
Yep. And we'll knock out two really quickly. Recommending that ONC replace the existing.
Actually, Ike, let's do public comments and then come back.
I was just thinking.
Okay, thank you.
ONC staff, can we open the lines for public comment?
Sure. We're going to open up our meeting for verbal public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press *6. To mute and unmute your line. So let's pause this for a moment to see if any members of the public raise their hand. Not seeing any hands raised, so let's turn it back to Steve to continue the conversation. Thank you.
Okay, to continue our discussion on electronic case reporting, looking at the second recommendation is that ONC replace the current real-world testing approach that enables HIT developers to self-certify that they've completed real-world testing for ECR to require real-world testing with live public health information systems as identified or recommended by the public health community so that there's actually validation that there is true ability to exchange information between HIT modules and public health entities receiving the data, and it is not, the testing does not occur only in test bed situations. This will help alleviate some of the issues that we've seen in the past in terms of implementing actual exchange between certified systems and public health systems that are not necessarily certified to ensure that there's a warm handoff and reduce the amount of effort and customization or subsequent effort after implementation. This particular issue has been addressed in or identified in previous high-tech reports, including the high-tech public health data system task force report that was produced fairly recently. Are there any suggestions in that space? Is this a recommendation that we can move forward?
I like it.
Wonderful.
All right. Did we actually approve all three of those, Ike?
We approved the two, third with a modification.
I'm sorry. Has it been modified or is that yet to come?
I will do the modification after the call. I've not yet.
Okay. And then I liked your, okay. So we've got 7 minutes. Shall we keep going?
Absolutely.
You're on a roll here.
Took us a little while to get started.
It's okay. But DSI is important.
We've got there, looking at privacy rule and consent. Looking at recommending that ONC adopt certification criterion that allows patients to request limits to disclosure of information using terminology like diagnoses with which patients are familiar to facilitate a clear understanding of choices made by patients.
Can we scroll down a little bit? I think we're missing the bottom of the field there. Thanks.
Yeah, the goal here is really looking at the adoption of language that is patient-friendly, so that patients are not being asked to make decisions about disclosure using terminology that they are unfamiliar with.
And who proposed this recommendation? Was this yours, Ike?
No, I think this came, I'd have to go back and chase it. This was not me.
Okay, just curious.
Are there any concerns with that recommendation?
I'm trying to digest it in the context of the renaming and discontinuing year themed editions.
Yeah, what exactly does this have to do with what we were asked to comment on? That was where I was going.
I think the concern was looking at patient-friendly language. It may not be specific feedback looking at the technical framework, but looking at an environmental consideration.
So I don't see this in column G in the member recommendations.
That might be a couple of rows below. I think we may have skipped in a way that we're sitting on different rows. We're looking at four, and Ike, you might be looking at row seven.
I jumped down. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was in a different place. My mistake. Recommending that ONC establish, maintain internet accessible, human machine readable comment or language regarding each particular standard.
But it was last in the certification requirement. Is that what we're getting at here?
Yeah. So that as we're looking at evolving from named standards in terms of looking at things like 2015 edition and like to a more flexible framework for adoption, creating a standardized method or table of identifying what are the relevant standards becomes rather important for providers and other entities in understanding what their technology is currently supporting, what it needs, what it may need to support in the future, and not looking at certified technology, but looking at what trading partners that are not using certified technology are expecting.
So I just want to make sure that we phrase this in a way that makes sense. So we're talking about a table that looks at each relevant certification requirement. Because we call it a requirement, we call it a regulation, we call it a standard, but we're using a lot of different terms here.
It's the criterion that encompasses some of this information. So currently, when you go to Chapel, is where you effectively see for each product that is certified which criterion they have been certified to. And there's optionality, so you might not see everything under for everybody, for every solution, but it's the criterion that's the link to say that's what I'm certified to. And then there is in that criterion, it may or may not specify a standard or whatever other kinds of things in there, but the criterion is the one that is the building block of certification. So I think we should consistently use that as you go through. I agree generally that this is the kind of information that you need, that you then can backtrack as to what it is. And particularly since they're going to want to move into a direction of an addition less, that becomes important that I can track each of these things at the individual criterion level, because they may have different dates that they are active. And you may start to be certified to it as a result at different times, et cetera. So we need to be able to keep easy track of which one is in effect, which one is applied, for what time range. So I agree with the intent behind this, that we need to have that clarity. But it's the criterion that we need to track, not the addition.
So I just changed all those words to criterion. Does it still make sense?
I think it would start to. So for each relevant criteria, for each relative criterion, and drop the word requirement. That includes the regulation number, because that is 170.315G10, for example. So that's known. It has a name already, typically. No, actually it does. So I think we just want to tie it in. So they're all elements that are actually already sitting on a criterion. The parts that need to be tracked additionally are dates and effective expired, right, et cetera.
And from a, you cannot necessarily replace each use of the word standard with criterion, because, for example, the immediate past standard is not the criterion, it's the label of what was being used.
Well, but the standard is referenced in the criterion, and it's the criterion of that you certify right to.
Okay, we're out of time. So maybe I don't know who proposed this initially.
This one was mine.
Okay. Sorry. So maybe just try to reword this.
Yeah, we'll reword
we'll
a
come
little
back
bit
and pick it up here next week. We've got a ton of work to do. Getting through the rest of these next week. So thank you all for your
thank you all, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.